topic that that we're going to be discussing for the next few minutes together is part of a list of topics that we put together that hopefully when we finish the work that we're doing here over the course of the summer, we'll be able to walk out with certainly a few tidbits that that we pick up of information that are not just things that are in space, that are things that we can't touch and feel, but things that are actually part of our daily lives, things that are extremely relevant to that which we do. And I certainly think that the following topic will be something that hopefully we can walk out with just a few, if not more than a few, real-life examples of what it means to feel compassionate for other people. The topic is the title of being Nosei Ba'olim Chaveiro, which literally translates as somebody who decides that they're going to cover the burden of another person, they're going to lift somebody else up, they're going to be there for somebody else in a time of need. And it's very fascinating because a lot of the world that we live in, certainly in 2017, where technology has taken over many of our lives and our benefits, and many of the other speakers tonight are going to talk about technology's role in the development of us as people, of our interpersonal skills, our interpersonal relationships. So we live in a world where it's very easy to identify with and to really feel the situation that somebody else is in. If you look on your Snapchats or on your Instagram, so it's very likely that many of you are following friends that are on whatever summer programs that they're on and whatever camps that they're in, and you're literally following up to the minute what they're doing in whatever particular time that that you refresh your Twitter page or you receive a Snapchat on your phone. And you can tell me exactly what's going on, where they are, what they're doing, what they're involved in. And generally, certainly during the summer when it's not the school year and there aren't pressures, so it seems like things are fun, it seems like things are enjoyable, it seems like everybody's having a good time and people are jumping off of bridges and jumping into water and going on awesome trips and awesome hikes and road trips and this and that and all sorts of different things. However, that comes with a challenge as well, because our brains and our minds become so used to that world of fun and excitement that if God forbid something bad were to happen, so unfortunately, we'd all live in a world where we would watch on our phones, where we'd receive Snapchats, where we'd look into Instagram accounts, and God forbid, we'd see tragedy. We'd see things that are sad. What would we feel like in that situation? What would our world look like if those were the Snapchats that were coming up? And I bet there are people that are sitting in this room that you've received those. You've received the text message that says, you know, my grandmother this, my grandfather that, God forbid. And I was in a situation that was disastrous, that was tragic, and what's my reaction to that particular message that comes my way? Generally, and tomorrow we'll make note of it, and that we're not going to be saying Tachanun, but tomorrow is the day of Tu B'Av, the day that the Gemara in Tainus tells us is one of the happiest days on the year of the Jewish calendar. And prior to Tisha B'Av, which was last week, so we prepared for Tisha B'Av with stories of Chorban, with stories of destruction, with stories of our tragic history and our tragic past, what it's been like to be a member of the Jewish people that have gone through all sorts of trials and tribulations to get to the point that we are today. And generally, when we get to the point of Tisha B'Av ends, and we go into a world of simcha, of happiness, everybody's dancing, and Shabbos Nachamu, and we're excited, and things are awesome. And we don't have in mind, we're not thinking perhaps about the tragedy that certainly still remains in the world, that on the eighth day of Av was certainly in part of our lives, and on the tenth day of Av will be just as tragic as it was on the eighth day of Av. And when we think about the tragedy that could strike over the course of that time, so we're in a period where we're preparing for Tu B'Av. We're preparing for the end of the summer. We're preparing for our final teal day to Eilat. We're not thinking about things that could potentially be tragic, that could potentially be sad. But at the same time, we're right there, right? Many of us perhaps live in places, live in communities that there are tragic things that are going on day after day where people are sick, where people are unfortunately hospitalized, where people are going through losing jobs and losing money and parents that are this, all sorts of things that are taking place in our world, and it's very difficult for us to really feel it. So on the one hand, we're so close, we're right there, we're following every single step of the way, But on the other hand, we're so far because we feel like there's nothing we could do. Because we feel like we could be there for our friends only up to a certain degree. But after that, what more could I possibly do? Where else could I possibly turn? So we live in this world of both aspects, both sides of this coin, where we're so lucky, but at the same time, we feel like we're so limited. And that's the unfortunate reality that hopefully over the course of the next few minutes, we're going to discuss. In the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos, so Pirkei Avos describe the Memches Kinyanim Torah, the 48 ways that we're able to acquire Torah. And goes through a list of all sorts of different things and the importance of having friends and the importance of speaking properly and doing all sorts of being adam lechaviro properly and reviewing our learning properly and putting ourselves in situations where we can succeed and on and on and on, and the list goes on. When the list gets to number 37, so the 37th way that we can become B'nai Torah, that we can become people that are Kone Torah, that we acquire Torah, is if we identify with the people around us. When somebody else around us is going through something difficult, going through something tragic, we're able not only to understand it, not only to read it on Instagram, read it on Snapchat, but we're able to actually do whatever we can about it. Many of you might be familiar with a YouTube clip that is an unfortunate glimpse into this world that I'm describing. And that's the clip. It's called Weird Things People Say at Shiva Houses, right? And anybody seen that clip? Some people, okay? So it basically goes through for a few minutes the awkward nature of walking into a house, walking into a Shiva house, where you walk in and you have very little to say. You sit down in front of the person in halacha state that you're not allowed to greet, you're not allowed to speak first. There are all sorts of restrictions that apply on the social behaviors of a based avel of a place where there's mourning going on. And you walk in and the person's father, died yesterday. And you sit there and you have absolutely nothing to say. So inevitably, it's going to be awkward. Inevitably, you're going to sit there and you're going to start saying all these random things, and people, you're going to be sitting there and hearing conversations like, oh, I promise, so-and-so, they're in a much better place right now. Yeah, that's really, that's really going to help out the person that sat at the deathbed of their parent for the last few months, right? And we're sitting there and it's awkward. There's some level of social awkwardness that's taking place in that room. And we're thinking to ourselves, what is it that we could do, right? And everybody comes, if there's anything I could do for you, if there's anything that I could possibly think about that you need, please let me know. That's one level of caring about somebody else. There's a second level of caring about other people, and that's what I'm about to describe right now. I heard of Aaron Kahn, the Rosh Yeshiva NYU, tell the following story that I think really encapsulates this idea of nosiv olim chaviro, of identifying with and doing whatever we could for a friend in a time of struggle. And the following story took place in Eretz Yisrael during one of the particular wars here, where there was a group of people that were sitting on a street, and a terrorist group came and ambushed this particular group of friends. They weren't, settlers, whatever that means. They weren't doing it. They were sitting on a street corner in the middle of Yerushalayim, like many of you did on Friday afternoon. And the terrorists walk by and they throw a grenade at this group of people. And the grenade, unfortunately, explodes right in the middle of them. People are rushed to the hospital. They go to the hospital in Yerushalayim. And word slowly gets out that this took place, and this was before the time of technology, making sure that things advanced much quicker than they did back then. And they get to the hospital, and word reaches a cousin of one of the people that were injured in this particular terrorist attack that his cousin was injured. And his cousin rushes to the hospital to see, is he okay? Is he missing anything? Does he need anything? What can I do for him? Does he have insurance? Is he covered? And he's there, and he's doing everything, and he's checking all the boxes, as any good cousin or sister or brother or friend would do, and can easily leave that hospital room, check the box, I did what I needed to do, I expressed my sorrow and my sympathy, my compassion for this person, and I'm yotze, I'm finished. This person, however, takes it to the next level, and he decides to do the following. He knows that the parents of this particular person that was injured in the terrorist attack, how are they going to find out? How are they going to find out that their son was almost killed in a terrorist attack in the middle of Yerushalayim? It's likely that what's going to happen, the newspapers are going to report a big attack in the middle of Yerushalayim, and these parents are going to find out about their child who's 95% dead in a hospital room in Shaarei Tzedek, that he's going to be dying over the course of the next few days. So he thinks to himself, is that an appropriate way to alert parents about the impending death of their child, that their child was killed in a terrorist attack? So he decides to take it a step further. And he goes to the parents' house, and he waits outside the house of those parents for hours overnight until the newspaper arrives the next morning. And what does he do? He steals the newspaper from the front walkway of the house of those parents. He goes inside, he knocks on the door of his aunt and uncle, and he unplugs the radio in the basement, and later on he has somebody come and say there's something wrong with the electricity, we'll be able to fix the electricity in a few minutes. Later on he goes in and he explains and he describes in a sympathetic fashion what happened on the street corner in Yerushalayim, but it's an elevated level of thinking about somebody else. He easily could have walked out of that hospital room and said, you know what? I'm finished. I expressed my sympathy. I can walk out. I'm done. Go on with my life. But he took it to the next level. He took it to a level where he said to himself, you know what? It's not enough. No Seib Ol Chaviro is not just going and not just speaking to and interacting with somebody who's sick. It's doing whatever I could. It's somebody that's thirsty. It's somebody that needs something that we think about above and beyond what it is that they could possibly need, what it is that can really help them in the situation that they're going through right now. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes out in the middle of Sefer Shmos, the Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Mitzrim that are beating up on a fellow Jew, so the Pasuk says, Vayi bayam imahim vayigdal Moshe, the Moshe got older, Vayetze el achiv vayar b'sivlo sam. And Moshe Rabbeinu saw his brothers, and he looked at what they were going. Vayar b'sivlo sam, vayar ish mitzri ma'ke ish ivri me'achiv. And he saw a Jew that was being hit by a fellow Mitzri. What do those words, vayar b'sivlo sam, what do the words mean that Moshe Rabbeinu stood and identified with, and he understood what these people were going through? So Rashi says something fascinating that I think is going to bring this to even the next level that we're going to discuss in the world of being nosev olim chaviro, of really carrying the burden of a fellow person, of a fellow friend. And Rashi says the following. Rashi tells us, vayar b'sivlo sam, nasan einav v'libo liyos miyatzer olehem, that Moshe Rabbeinu came out and he took his eyes and he took his heart, nasan einav v'libo, and what did he do? Liyos miyatzer olehem. Then Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just see this situation and say, you know what? I saw it. I hope they're feeling okay. I hope everything's going to work out. Moshe Rabbeinu placed his eyes on the situation and he did something about it. The story goes on and describes what Moshe did, but it wasn't enough that he just showed up. Vayar b'sivlo sam. Vayar means, says Rashi, that he went and he acted on that which he saw to be mekayim, to fulfill the idea, the concept of being nosev b'ol chaviro. We have a similar idea, a similar concept in Shema that we say every single day. We say, V'lo sesuru acharei levavchem v'acharei nechem sheratem zonim achareihem. So Rashi comments there as well. And Rashi describes the difference between the heart, the eyes, and the connection between that which we see, which is nice, which is great, which is going to the hospital and making sure everybody's okay. But the elevated level of nasan einav v'yatzer aleihem, of putting their heart, putting their investing into making sure that this person has what they need, that this person isn't going through a struggle, that they can't be dealt with, of going the elevated level to try and make things a little bit better, to try and look beyond the situation that's in front of them and make sure that that person is tended to with whatever wish he or she absolutely needs. We, as teenagers growing up. So it's a very common occurrence that maybe your parents on a weekday night give you a curfew. On a Friday night you go to friends and you're supposed to be back by a certain time, and your parents tell you at midnight, I expect you to be back. So for us, right, we go to a friend and we go, we have a good time, and as our veterans were discussing before, so our Friday nights can certainly be things that are occupied with good, with Torah, with learning, with singing, with friends, with schmoozing, with chevra, with food, all of these great things. And our parents told us that we should be back at a certain time, right? And we get a curfew of 12:15 or 12:30 or 1 o'clock, right? And, you know, I'm having a good time. My friends are all, you know, at we all walked somewhere on Friday night. We're chilling. We're hanging out. And little do you know that as you're sitting and hanging out, clock's ticking. And your parents are looking at that clock. And every minute that goes by, your parents are becoming more and more frantic. Where's my kid? I don't understand. I told them to be back at a certain time. So sure enough, you know, your curfew is 12 o'clock. You come back at 1:15. And you knock on the door and you walk in and your parents are sitting there absolutely frantic. They're ready to call the police because they have no clue where you are. And, ah, oh, Mom, come on. You knew that I was going to come back a little bit later. 12 o'clock usually really means 12:15. Doesn't actually mean 12 o'clock. And your parents are sitting there at the edge of their seats having no clue where you are. And we think to ourselves, doesn't matter to me. I'm not impacted by that. Mom, I'm fine. You knew I was fine. Yeah, because we know we were fine. Your parents are expecting you to come home at midnight. And every minute that goes by after when your parents are expecting you to be home, and it's very unlikely that your parents assume you're doing anything bad or you're doing anything you shouldn't be doing, it's just so that they can touch base with you and make sure that you're okay. And we have to understand that our parents are there for us, and our parents are frantic for a reason. There's something we could do about it, right? We show up a little bit late, so we're ruining minutes and minutes and minutes of our parents' lives, and unfortunately, they sit there waiting for that door to open. And it's an easy thing. It's some, you know, my parents are expecting me at a certain time, so I'm going to be home. I'm going to be home at that time. We know now that there's a yeshiva in Yerushalayim called the Mir Yeshiva. It's a pretty famous yeshiva. Many of you may have seen it, may have visited it over the course of the last few weeks here. The Mir Yeshiva, before it was in Yerushalayim, was in a city, before it moved after the war to Shanghai, it was in a city called Mir. And the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva in the city of Mir had a certain way about the things that went on in the yeshiva, and they made sure that the boys, as they were growing, as they were learning, as they were involving themselves in the world of Torah, that they were developing as human beings as well. And as Rabbi Benovitz mentioned just a few minutes ago, so we, as we grow and as we learn, so as we grow and as we sit in front of a Gemara, as we sit and we learn and we develop as B'nai Torah, so we're also obviously sitting and growing and developing as human beings, as simple people, as compassionate, empathetic people that are just good, right? And we're growing, we're moving. And this was a vision of the Mir Yeshiva. The Mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva was somebody by the name of Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch. Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch was one of the great leaders of the previous generation, somebody who had a real eye into the human mind. The svarim that he's written are really unbelievably poignant, very relevant to the lives that we live today in 2017, just as relevant as they were, you know, close to 100 years ago in the city of Mir. And he describes the following story that took place on a regular afternoon. After the story took place, Rav Yerucham Lubavitch approached the Rosh Yeshiva and he decided that it was time to close the yeshiva. The yeshiva was ready to close its doors because of the episode that I'm about to describe to you. Now, in these cities in Poland, it was very rare that Jews were treated with particularly high levels of love. Communities were not particularly excited about the growth of the yeshivas and the growth of the Jewish communities. And when a group of boys would leave the yeshiva after a day in yeshiva, so It would happen at times that the police would stop them on the street, ask them for identification, understand, try to see who these people were, and get a glimpse into what this world of the Mir Yeshiva was that was taking over the city of Mir in Poland. So it just so happened that there were five boys that left the yeshiva on a regular weekday afternoon. They were going back to the place that they lived, and sure enough, the police chased them down, and the police asked them for their identification. So there were three boys, three out of five that lived in one apartment, two out of the five boys that lived in another apartment, and the police said, no, we need to see identification. Who are you? Where are you from? What are you doing here? So the boys were coming from yeshiva, they didn't have their identification on them, so they said to the police, you know, we have to go, and we have to go back to our apartments. And when we get to our apartments, we'll show you our identification. So the policemen follow these five boys. Three boys go up to their apartment building. They go into their apartment. They get their identification cards. They show them to the police officers. And they go their merry way. They go back into their apartment. And they go to sleep. The night is over. They go and life is good. The two boys that did not live in that initial building, so they go with the police into their apartment building, which is right next door to the apartment building of their three friends that they had just checked in with just a few minutes ago with the police. And the policeman asked them, where's your identification? Who are you? What are you doing here? And sure enough, they show their identification, and the police let them go. The police let them live happily ever after. And things seem to be okay. The next morning, the boys come into yeshiva, and Rosh Lubavitch calls the entire Mir Yeshiva into the Beis Medrash for a meeting. Very important meeting. Rosh Lubavitch wants to close the Beis Medrash. He wants to close the Mir Yeshiva. And nobody can understand why. And Rosh Lubavitch says the following thing. Rosh said that the previous night, when the three students of the yeshiva were chased down by the police, were sent back to their apartment building, it was clear to Rabbi Rucham of Ovitz, it was clear to the Mashiach, that after the cops had checked into who they were going to go with their two friends to the other building and to make sure that their friends were okay. To make sure that even though they were taken care of, that even though they were going to survive this, you know, quote-unquote raid by the police in the city of Mir, that their two friends that left after them were going to be okay. And when Rav Lubavitch called them into the room, these five boys, the first question he asked them was, how did you sleep last night? How did you sleep last night? The boys looked back, the Mashkiach, and the boys said, pretty comfortably, we got X amount of hours of sleep. Brooklyn said, right when they made that comment, that's when he decided, you know what? We're failing. We're doing something wrong. We're not accomplishing the goals that we set out at the beginning of what we're trying to do with our students. Rabbi Rucham looked at these three boys and he said, you know what? I get the fact that you didn't go with the other two boys to the apartment building. It's understandable. You're human beings. It was a long day. You're tired. But the fact that you were able to sleep, not knowing what was going to happen to your two friends that were yeshiva students with you, that I can't handle. If that is the way that we're training our Talmidim, our students, then what are we doing here? What are we accomplishing? What are we gaining? If the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is not going to exist to a level that we need it to be, so all the Torah that we're learning, we can throw it out the window. It doesn't matter. Tversky mentioned just a few minutes ago, somebody who sits and somebody who learns for 24 hours a day that doesn't involve themselves in chesed is Dome L'Misha Ein Lo Elokav. It's a person that doesn't feel the world of godliness. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, we're going to be learning Hilchos Tshuva in just a few weeks. The beginning of El, the Rambam says the following in Perek Gimel. The Rambam says, HaPoresh Midarkei HaTzibor, Afal Pi Shelo Avar Averos, somebody who goes off the path of the entire community, the entire congregation, even if they haven't done an avera, they haven't done anything wrong. Ela nivdal me'adat yisra, ve'in o'ste mitzvah spichvalon, ve'lo nichnas bitzarasan, ve'lo mis'aneh B'ta'anisan. Somebody that doesn't identify with the Jewish people, somebody that doesn't feel what it's like to be part of Klal Yisrael, to understand and to empathize with families that are going through tragedy, the Rambam says the following. Elaholech b'darcho ke'echad migoyei haaretz, v'ki'ilu eino mehen eino chilek lo'olam haba. Somebody who lives their life that doesn't, it's not nichnas l'tzarasan, he doesn't enter into the world of somebody else's tragedy, of somebody else's shortcomings, somebody else's difficult situation, you have no olam haba, says the Rambam. It's extremely sharp. That's an unbelievable thought, right? I could be, like we described before, I could go to the hospital and I could sit with that hospital patient for hours and discuss and describe and do whatever it is that may be doing. But if I don't think about going to the parent's house and taking the newspaper off of the front walkway and unplugging the radio in Tel Aviv, somebody that's Ein Lo Chelek, the Olam Haba, an unbelievable, unbelievable lashon of the Rambam. I'll just close with the following story, an unbelievable thought, an unbelievable idea that I heard from Rabbi Benovitz a few years ago that I think closes up this idea that really gives us insight into the next few minutes, certainly, and what we're trying to accomplish here tonight. There are two reporters in Israel that are pretty famous reporters, one of which covers the news stories that take place in the more Haredi communities, the more religious communities, and writes stories frequently about the greatness of the Torah community, the community that, you know, sends their children to Chadarim, that their children are involved in, you know, real Hasmada, real Limud HaTorah, and they're growing as people, they're developing as people, they're maturing as human beings. And that's one writer that writes in the Jerusalem Post relatively frequently. Another writer writes in a less right-wing news outlet, and he represents, he writes for generally the more chiloni world, the less religious world of Israeli culture, and he writes about secular society, things that we're doing, the way that this country is developing in the world of technology, in the world of all sorts of advances that we're making, engineering and the like. And an argument began between these two authors one week when the author from the less religious, quote-unquote, newspaper described the following. And he writes about the greatness of secular culture, of secular society. That secular Israel and Tel Aviv, that's the world that God wants. If God even exists, so the godly land of Israel that we live in is a secular culture in the middle of Tel Aviv. When you look at the yeshiva world, when you look at people that are learning Torah, so they're involved in all sorts of money embezzlement and all sorts of laundering and all sorts of illegal activities, and they're suspicious on all sorts of different things, and look at the culture that we have. Look at what we live on morals, we live on ethics. The streets of Tel Aviv are holier than the streets, the Torah streets of Yerushalayim. This infuriates this writer that writes for the Jerusalem Post. And he sees this article and he can't believe what his eyes are seeing. He can't believe that this could possibly be true, that somebody could speak like this. And he obviously defends the Jewish people, and he comes at it from a perspective of, certainly there are exceptions to the rule, that generally as a Jewish community, that we try to be honest, we try to be, you know, as committed to making sure the world is as good a place as possible. And they go back and forth describing why their community is better and why the other community just is lacking something. Is lacking something that's so integral to what it means to be a community of holiness, what it means to be a Torah community. The argument comes back to the more religious author, and he closes up with the following, and he says like this, I don't want to argue anymore. This discussion is over for all intents and purposes. But what I want to tell you is the following. And I want to tell you something that separates our community from every other community, from every other religion that exists in the world. In Yerushalayim, he says, and he writes in the Jerusalem Post, just a few weeks ago, There was a whole asifa. There was a gathering of people that came to discuss and describe how awful and how traumatic and how tragic the world of Lashon Hara is that we live in. And thousands of people piled into Yerushalayim from cities all over the country to discuss and talk about what our community could do to better ourselves in the world of Lashon Hara. And he writes very sharply, when was the last time your community got together to work on an aspect of Bin Adam L'Chaveiro? When was the last time that some interpersonal relationship was worked on in your community as a community? And with that, the argument was finished, and this writer had nothing else to say. Because what defines us, what categorizes us, what characteristic gives us the characteristic of being a Jew, is being somebody who works on ourselves. Being somebody who realizes the power and the emphasis of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And we didn't gain anything over the course of the summer in the Beis Medrash. We didn't gain anything from our morning shirim or our chaburas or our night shirim or our night seder chavrusas or any other conversation that we had in the world of Torah. We gained as being better people, as being somebody who was. We clean up the basketball court. Like our veterans mentioned, everybody leaves the court, and you're the last guy on that court that goes around every single day that picks up every single one of those water bottles. That's 220 water bottles that were on the courts after the basketball period today. You're the one that cleaned them up, so we've accomplished something certainly. And the more we grow and the more we develop, and the more we sit and learn, and the more we tap into the world of Torah, and the deeper we go, and the more Tosafim that we learn, and the more Rishonim we understand, and the more Pesukim and Rashi we know of, the more we'll realize that part and parcel of being a Jew is Vayar B'Siv Lo Sam. Part and parcel of being a Jew is what Moshe Rabbeinu did when he saw that mitzri of, he saw what was taking place, and V'Nasa Nibo onto the circumstances that were in front of him. He didn't just see, he didn't just do, but he went a level above. He went a step ahead. He thought just one brief level up of what was expected of him. And that's what made Moshe Rabbeinu such a leader. That's what makes the Jewish people the unbelievable nation that we are. That's what defines us as a people. The Gemara in Yevamos says we're people that are golei chasadim, that we're defined by our interactions, our interpersonal relationships, bein adam l'chaveiro. And that's why over the course of the summer, over the course of the last week, trying as hard as possible to develop in this world, to go home, to being more wholesome people, to be better people, to interacting with people in a more real way, in a way that we realize that while we do have tremendous ramifications, and the world of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is a world that is certainly required of us as much as any other avodah that we're going to be involved in over the course of the summer. I think the other shirim are beginning in just a few minutes. So the other shirim are here. There's another shirim yummy.